Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your co-host, Colin Stewart. Today, I'm joined by Andres Maguera. He's got an interesting relationship with Predictable Revenue. He's the future author of the Spanish version of Predictable Revenue, and he's also taken some of the principles from the book and applied them to the rest of his business. And he's got that growing and humming at 50% year over year. So we're going to divert from the general sales topic today. We're going to dive a little bit into marketing, customer success, and sales development. And look at the structure that he's created and how he's built his team. Andres, welcome to the show.
Hey, Colin. Thanks so much for having me here. It's an honor, actually, to be on the Predictable Revenue after so many years of being a huge fan of the book and Aaron Ross as well.
And your future book.
And obviously, yeah, the future book coming out in Spanish for the Sales 2.0 blog, Ventas 2.0. And I'm sure it's going to be a huge piece of content for all the Latin American people that are starting to sell software as a service.
Right on. So tell me about how you got started with, or your introduction to Predictable Revenue.
Yeah, so actually it's a pretty good story. I was actually at a sales hacker event. I think this was down in mid 2014 or early 2014, yep. Down in Seattle. And while I had already heard reviews about Predictable Revenue, and I had just not had the time, maybe like so many people here on the podcast or out there, or found the time to read it. And while I was at this sales event, they introduced that Mary Lou Taylor was actually at the event. She was there as a guest, listening to the speeches, and she was sitting next to me. That was the crazy part, right? So I got engaged with her. I loved her communications and her attitude, and I went back home and bought the book, started reading it, and it just blew my mind. I'm a big fan of Henry Ford and how he, I would say, revolutionized or innovated in the factory line, right, by dividing different processes. So obviously, when I read Predictable Revenue, it was an instant love relationship with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then obviously, after reading it, I started applying a lot of the methodologies. So far, it's been a great learning experience applying a lot of the different new positions that it even shows you in the sales development part. And with using a lot of the techniques in my SaaS business, I've been able to grow the revenue over 50% year over year. What's good about here is also Latin America is really, really early stage in terms of SaaS. So they've been... So obviously, since it's harder to get customers for mm-hmm. for SaaS. Obviously, there's less people on the internet. There's less access to smartphones. So it's honestly a huge success to be able to grow at 50% year over year.
That's amazing. So tell me about this team that you've used to grow 50% year over year. How big is that? And what does that structure look like?
Yeah. So far, right now we're around 44 people up to today. This grew from 22 last year and from 12 or 13 the previous year, and from one the previous year before that. The structure so far right now, it's around 17 people that I have for sales and customer success. And then the rest, I have around seven people in my marketing content team. And then I have HR with a happiness department and all the other intelligence department and operational the spots. But I have 17 people on the sales front, and that includes sales development team, MRR team, so SDRs, MRR team, AEs, and customer success, which I divide in both, right, growth and renewals.
Gotcha. And that's awesome. And so, you know, you and I talked a couple of weeks ago about, you know, how you sort of specialized each of the individual roles, you know, based on, you know, inspired by Henry Ford. Where did it really start for you? Did you start with a sales development team and then sort of spread out from there?
Yeah. After reading Predictable Revenue, I actually brought the book to my CEO, the CEO of Question Pro. And I was like, because we were not doing any outbound. So basically the company grew all the way up to $6 million in ARR. Mm-hmm. I joined the company to help them develop Latin America, and I had never done inbound, right? So I came from the outbound world. So when I realized the inbound was so good, I was like, we have a huge opportunity without the outbound. Obviously, Aaron Ross' book gives you a really good playbook to start getting some leads in the outbound front. So as soon as I read it, I wanted to build my sales development team. And I think that was the start of it. When budget came, right, after some time, that I got the green light to develop the project. And then after I saw the magic of, you know, just being able to get in touch with so many companies and get all these opportunities to come in the door through, outbounding via LinkedIn and using the internet and some of the automation. It just made sense to me. Before being a sales guy, I was a digital marketer for another company. So it made sense to me to apply this methodology to create content partnerships, to exchange backlinks, and not backlinks in terms of like, I'll give you a backlink or you give me a backlink, or more like I'll go and have a good content on another site, you know, have that backlink, as well as get webinars or exchange stuff. So my idea was basically it's like a sale, but it's easier, right? Because you don't gotta get money. You just gotta get something else, right? And yeah, it makes sense to apply it there, and it's worked fantastically so far.
That's amazing. So what you're effectively doing is you have SDRs, but they're focused on marketing specific activities.
Yes. So I actually have two SDRs that continuously outbound for content partnerships. And this could be, I created different spiffs depending on what they get. And this could be their publication on a magazine, a publication on another blog, contributors to our blog, podcast, webinar, or backlink, right? And I have basically two SDRs continuously getting us these content partnerships. Through there, we post 12 articles on different blogs. We have a pool of more than 50 contributors that send us content for free, obviously, consistently, right? So we have a lot of content. And I think that's the key part, right? The key part is doing the sales, the SDR development playbook for marketing. But the key part here is that basically, since you start getting a lot of content, you create this like content machine, right? Just like the lead machine if you develop an SDRT, right?
Mm-hmm. And so what's been the impact on leads, on revenue, of having the marketing team focused the way you do?
No, the impact has been incredibly. Obviously, SEO is something that I guess we're all still wondering exactly how it works, even Google employees, but we all have some signs, right? So how that worked out is after 3 years of, well, 2 years actually of continuously doing this marketing SDR work, we've done more than 30 webinars with influencers on our industry, and we've gotten more than 300 backlinks to specific sites that we wanted to position, and that created traffic growth immensely. So we now, out of 180 keywords that we follow for the market research or service industry, we compete with SurveyMonkey. We have all the word keywords in number one and number two, or sometimes one and two. If you search service software in Spanish, we have number one and two, and each of those sites have more than 30 backlinks. Most of them got received through partnerships and not organically. As we found out, it's really hard to get these super organic links, right?
Mm-hmm. Wow. And SurveyMonkey is obviously a massive company. So you're going up against them with a small team that's just out there hustling, using what you guys have learned here.
Yes, that's what we're doing right now. And I think I would say we're kicking ass. Maybe we don't have as many users as they do, because I got to be honest, right? They have a lot of presence online. But at least on the SEO front, I mean, most of the keywords, we are better positioned than them.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So marketing was just the start. You've also taken this to your customer success team. So talk to me about how that structure fits in here.
Yeah, so this was actually a different vision. The vision for the customer success team on implementing some of the techniques that we get in the predictable revenue book is that basically when I saw that, oh my God, I used to be a sales guy that would prospect the leads, then would try to get them in the door to a demo. I would do the demo, I would close the demo, I would get service. And then when I saw the book and how they created the specific roles for each of these different action items that you gotta do, it just blew my mind, right? I was like, this is what I gotta do. I'm obviously closer. So I was like, oh my God, if I had a prospector and if I had, right, I'd be able to close so much more. So once I saw that and I developed, when I was developing my customer success team, it came to me with the idea. I tried for more than a year having really high-level technical people solving my clients' problems, as well as trying to upsell them or renew them. And while it did not fail, it worked well. It never exploded my net revenue from existing business. Mm-hmm. It just kept renewing good. We were losing some business, right? So one day, I think the other book that helped me was The Customer Success by Salesforce. But the idea came exactly from dividing the AE and the SDR. I got the idea of, you know what, maybe I need the technical people, but I also need like closers, right? And the people that should be in contact with my clients should be the closers, right? Mm. And then I was like, okay, maybe I could have like the same structure as the SDR and the AE, but instead of them sending them demos, then the customer success AE would send them problems to the technical people, and these would not face the clients. A lot of the times, these developers or technical skilled people do not even want to talk to the customer. They just want to solve the issue, right? And then the once it's solved, this bounces it back to the AE customer success person, and he basically brings back the solution and then obviously finds ways to sell more all the time, right? And this has also opened up for a lot of engagement with our clients. Like now, sometimes there's a quick fix for something we know it takes 10 minutes to solve, and then the customer success AE now stays at 10 minutes on the phone with the client, creating a report, you know, getting to know more about them and while they solve the issue behind the door or behind closed doors, like I would say. But that has worked fantastically. After we implemented this method, our existing business now start exploding, and we're running it right now at 50% growth so far. It's been 4 months, but it's not bad.
Existing business is growing 50%.
Yeah, and so existing business, it's growing not totally 50% because we're losing some clients as well.
Yeah.
On the ARR, on the annual revenue, we're probably growing at 18 to 20% if you take into account lost clients. Because we, since we are a market research platform, we have a lot of agencies that had projects that they lose them and they come and go.
Yeah.
So we are in a high churn, I would say, vertical. Yeah.
It gets to the point where it's almost not even churn. It's just this is a short term project. So you sort of, it was naturally only ever going to be a 7 month project, you know. And it's not like you lost them because the product failed. They just sort of, the project ended. So naturally.
Yeah, project ended. We're still in touch with a lot of these customers. They come back a lot of times.
That's great.
But yeah, but I would say net, it's like an 18% growth on the portfolio.
So talk to me about how, let's talk about the structure of this customer success team. So you have a front-facing CS or customer success SDR, and then you have the back-end accounting customer success account exec, and they're more of a sales engineer, right? So you have front-end and back-end. Is that how it works?
Yes, that's exactly how it works. I split the line. I have two managers. One, basically, I call the customer success team, and he's the customer success manager. And then the customer success AE, I called it customer experience. And then I have a leader there. And yeah, basically, if there's any issue with existing business, it's the sales AE that basically picks it up and gets in touch with the customer success or technical part. And obviously, while these guys are fixing problems or sometimes also looking, analyzing their accounts to see how we can engage the accounts more, because the technical people also analyze accounts and are always looking for opportunities to incentivize the usage of the account. The reason how this happens is I measure the customer success team, the technical part, on the renewal of the portfolio. So if I had 10 accounts on March this month, I expect 10 accounts back from them. Mm-hmm. To renew, and then I measure the customer experience team in the revenue. So with them, I don't mind if they only come back with 6 customers, as long as they come back with 120% net
revenue.
So, well, I have these two teams working together basically for the goal of renewing and growing these accounts, but one chasing the retention of clients and then one chasing the growth of the accounts. I feel that's where the key part is growing. Or working. That's the key piece that's working so far.
Gotcha. And both of those teams, are those two, just to help me understand, are those two separate teams that have an SDR and an AE related to them, or is that those are the two different groups? So the one is more focused on just making sure that the customers are staying, and then the sales engineer type is focused on the upsell.
Yeah, so they actually work together. It's like the same goal. So they have a different metric, but it's the same goal. It's two different teams that right now both report to me, but the vision in that structure is that eventually there's one guy, right, for customer experience, mm-hmm. and then both teams report to them because they work closely together. They actually work in the same area. Even though there's two managers, they even have scrums together, et cetera, because they're basically working the same piece of the business, right? The existing portfolio.
Mm-hmm. Just from different angles, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. They need each other. Like basically the CST team cannot pitch up sales and cannot basically they have to renew the account without them renewing it. So they have to actually be in close communication with their AE that grows it to be able to actually renew and grow these accounts.
Gotcha.
Creates like a little, I think I told you about this before, but it creates like a little, you know, like a automated management without having somebody actually manage it, because the support guy wants to have it renewed, but then he cannot call it, right? So if the AE is being a little bit lazy, like we know I'm a sales guy, I gotta admit it, sometimes we get lazy, then obviously the technical person is like pinging him, right? Like we gotta renew this account. Yeah. So it creates like a sustainable self-management system. Mm-hmm.
Sounds like you've been reading some of Andy Grove's material there with like the sort of counterbalancing sort of metrics there. That's awesome.
I actually have not read it. What's the book for that, Colin?
Oh man, I'm totally
Andy Grove
here. Yeah.
No worries. I'll check it out.
He's got a couple of really good ones. I'll add a link into the show notes and I'll ping it to you afterwards. I've got it on my Kindle right now, but could I think of the name of the book? No, not right now. It'll come to me as soon as I stop trying to think about it.
No worries. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'll pick it up as soon as I get the link.
Cool. So we've talked marketing and you've got your SDRs pursuing the content. You've specialized your customer success team. You've got them focusing on, you know, prospecting to your existing customer base to focus on not just making sure people are renewing, but also looking for larger upsell projects. Now let's move on to the sort of meat and potatoes. This is the sales team. Let's talk about what your sales team looks like and how you sort of structured it there.
Yeah. So currently I have a sales team and I have both inbound and outbound. My inbound is a lot more developed just because since the SEO exploded, I have a 3,000 to 3,500 leads per month organically. And
you
then
poor guy.
Yeah, no, I cannot even service them. Right now, I turned my ads on last week. I think I told you I had them off, yeah. But I turned them on just because I cannot have the competition get them. So I just turned them on, but I cannot service them fully. But I have on my MRR team, the market response team, who basically services the inbound, qualifying the opportunities. Currently, I have 5 reps, and each of them, their quota is to qualify 20 qualified opportunities. Now, for the opportunities generated by those 5 MRRs, I have 5 AEs, and same thing. Basically, they gotta give the 20 qualified demos, right? And I have one of these Andy groups, I guess, self-management systems here as well, because now obviously the AE has to tell that the opportunity was not qualified if it wasn't. And the reason why my team does that is because I incentivize their commissions based on their effectiveness. So if they gave 20 qualified demos, they're going to have more chance of actually closing. So this way they don't just mark it as qualified if it wasn't, because their effective rate goes down. Mm-hmm. And they basically make less commission. And then on the outbound part, I have 2 AEs currently, and I had 3 SDRs, and now I have 4. Normally what is harder for us. So that why the ratio is more, maybe, double than versus the inbound is because on the outbound we're looking for whales. So the SDRs take a lot of time to find these high quality qualified leads. Normally I ask them for 10, but we hardly ever hit the goal, if I be honest with you. But I'm looking mm-hmm. for a 20K plus, 50K plus deals on this outbound. Now for my inbound, my average ratio, it's 3 to 5K deals. And with this, mostly with inbounds, have we gotten with the 1.2 million ARR I was able to finally start the outbound team around 8 months ago. I built an outbound team 2 years ago, and my inbound exploded, thankfully, and I had to use all my SDRs as MRRs.
Yeah,
which is a good thing.
Great. It's,
if I hadn't read the book and if I hadn't prepared with the SDRs, the inbound would have exploded, and I would have just wasted the opportunity.
Yeah, that's amazing. So if we're talking about your SDRs, you mentioned something interesting there that you've got them hunting larger deals.
Yes.
Talk to me about the sort of levels here, because the dollar amounts, because is a question I guess get asked all the time is, you know, what's the smallest deal size that an SDR should pursue? And I get a variety of different opinions, but I'd love to hear sort of how your take on it.
So I've actually, and this is a good question for me, because I've done the other way, where I did outbound for a couple of months, just closing $900 deals, the Corp Annals, which is, it's my best product. And this was working for me. I got to be honest with you. Salaries are a little bit maybe cheaper here where I'm at in Latin America. So I don't know how this plays out in the States, but I was getting good IRI with the $1,000 deals. That was the only reason. Since that was working, we were closing deals from then. There, that's the only reason why I escalated it to trying to find bigger deals. Honestly, I feel like the starting with smaller deals helped me believe, and I think believing in the outbound and the SDRs is key, because it takes time for this to play out and pan out and give you ROI. And if you're not patient, you could be investing a lot of time, energy, money, and effort, and it could all go to waste, right? You could be this close to getting the gold, but if you're not patient, you lose it, right? So I think for me, starting with smaller deals, the smaller deals had a quicker closing cycle. And that honestly basically just motivated me, because after I, you know, set up the system, had the SDRs look for this, you're right, leads that would just close the annual cheap version of our product. And then after I was able to close some of these in less than 30, 45 days, this really motivated me. I was like, this works, right? I got to try it out with higher amounts. But obviously as with higher amount, you might lose the patience on waiting for that ROI, right? Kind of like the SEO, you gotta believe in this for like 1 year, at least I would say 18 months, right? If you're not gonna go build out an outbound team, you're not prepared to invest 12, 18 months, if possibly 24 months fully committed to this, I'd say not even do it. And I don't know, what's your take on this, Colin? What do you think?
You know, outbound is expensive, right? You know, even based, you know, outside of San Francisco, hiring SDRs, you're looking at, you know, $250,000, $500,000, you know, dollars minimum to build that team. If you got a manager, a couple of reps, the tools, all the data. So when we work with companies, we're usually talking about, you know, you want to be pursuing deals that are $10,000 and larger. And really, I mean, to get the best case, you really should have deals that, you know, that are in that sort of 20K to 250K is sort of the range. And the sales process differs as you get above 100K is what we found, but the 20K seemed to be that sweet spot. But with that, like when you're pursuing these larger deals, right? And if you read any of Jason Lemkin stuff, or if you read, you know, From Impossible to Inevitable, they talk about, you know, when you're doing outbound, you can double your deal size, and most companies aren't charging enough. And so just double. And that's sort of the conventional wisdom. But I think the interesting thing that you're talking about here is actually when you first start with outbound, go after the smaller deals where you can guarantee some quick wins. And I really like that, because we've seen time and time again, companies start with outbound and they're pursuing these deals that are, you know, 50, 100K, and they're, you know, 6 month sales cycles, 6 to 9 month sales cycles. It's like, well, you know, it's going to take you 6 months to get your team up and running just off the ground, right? And where you're booking meetings and some is starting to enter pipeline. And if you've got a 6 month sales cycle, it's like, well, geez, it's a year plus before you're starting to see any results. Whereas this, you know, even if you understand that, you know, hey, I'm sitting here in Denver, or I'm in New York, I'm in Boston, and there's no way I'm going to be profitable at closing a $1,000 deal. That's okay, because what you're just looking for is that proof point, right? Of, hey, we can email somebody cold and then we can close them over outbound, and this process works.
I agree. I think I got lucky. At that point, I think just the product I would sell the most, or the one that I knew how to sell the most, was the $1,000 product. So that's why I went to outbound that one. And obviously, as I've been with the company now for 4 years, every year my deal size has grown, right? Also, as I grew the structure, obviously, I'm the local LATAM CEO. So obviously, there's a huge leap. I get it with an A. But I can tell you that consistently, like my average deal size has gone up. And that's also what has motivated me to try out now going after bigger deals, because I have proved that I know I can now sell 50K deals, 40K deals, right? Before 2 years ago, I had not even sold that one 30K deal. So I think that for me, I got lucky just going for the small meat and then growing towards bigger deal sizes as we also learn and improved our processes in the SDR, because the beginning is tougher.
Absolutely. And there's so many different things that can go wrong in so many different ways. And like you said, you never know. You can be chipping away. You never know how close you are to like just hammering open that golden nugget. But so many companies, you know, after 6-9 months, they say, oh, you know what, we've just been hammering away and all we see is dust, right? And they don't realize that, you know, maybe you're not an inch away, but you're probably a couple inches off in the wrong direction. And if you would just sort of keep hammering at it and adjust, eventually you're going to get there.
I agree. And that's, I think we've all learned like through that. Honestly, for me, predictable revenue was the mind blown, right? The opening of the eyes. And obviously through experience and some other good books, right, that we have out there, I was able to, like you say, optimize and, you know, look at why I failed on some of the key pieces. The first time that I tried the team, I completely failed because of the passing the lead. I tried to do it stock market New York style, where like I had the SDR literally connected with the AE on Skype on a same channel. Then once the SDR was finally literally live, he tried to like, boom, pass it. Yeah. And for me, that totally did not work out.
Really?
On Skype,
I guess, yeah.
Yeah, on Skype, yeah. And I think I had not understood correctly the flow of qualifying the lead. And now once the lead is qualified, it goes to the demo. Then the SDR keeps chasing the demo until they get there, right? I think I was missing that key part the first time, failed for 3 months. But then, like you say, optimized and rerouted to the good part or the good process.
That's interesting. Why do you think it failed? Because I've seen some people doing hot transfers.
With me, I think it was two things. I think with the hot transfer, they were basically, I would say that the SDR, since they were new too, because the first time that I started the team, they were not being fully truthful with the lead. So I guess they were qualifying the lead and then trying to get it to a call with an AE or to a demo with the AE, but not fully being transparent on like, hey, would you like to join a 30-minute or 20-minute presentation of our tool, right? So they just realized they had or they detected the necessity. They'll be like, hey, we have an expert of our tool. I'd like to connect you right away, right? Without even like actually being transparent about how it was going to work. So I think that was one. And then the second one, when it was not the hot transfer, it was just our process between scheduling the demo and getting the lead to go. So I would schedule the demo by the SDR, and then I was having the AE now chase until they get there. So I think I had the process a little bit crippled. Yeah. Then I changed towards where like the SDR always, basically it's their lead until they get to the demo. And I think that was a key piece that silver lining that got me in it working.
Why do you think the change had such an impact?
I think what was happening, the AEs were focused on closing deals, actually. So even though they were already scheduled interviews, and since my AEs back then were traditional, they had never, they basically were doing the full cycle. They also felt like they'd had no rapport with the lead. And I don't know if you guys get this problem a lot, but a lot of old school salespeople or salespeople that have done the full cycle, they don't have belief. They believe that if they don't qualify the client, they cannot sell them to the client. And I think it was part disbelief from the salespeople. And the second one was the distraction, right? Since they were focused on closing, they were not focused on chasing the lead to actually show up on the demo. So I think changing the focus of like, you the SDR, you follow this lead, you follow up until they get to the actual meeting point.
Yep.
I think that was it.
Cool. I love it. I've seen a variety of different ones, and you know what's going to work in different in every organization is going to vary a little bit. But I think we're tending towards the SDR book in the meeting, making sure that you know they're qualified, they're gold, they're paid on the right people showing up, as opposed to, here, I'm just going to make an introduction and then off you go.
Yeah. I think that's what has worked for me so far.
Right on. Andres, I want to just come back one last question here, just to wrap up your sales team. Cause we talked about how you've got the MRR structure, the SDR structure. You obviously have some pretty successful AEs. So what are you doing for AEs there, and what are their goals?
Yeah, so for the AEs, their main metric is to close. Each of my AEs has to close $10,000 per month, $10,000. Now, like I explained, I'm selling to Latin America. So if you take into account the exchange rate of the coin, right, and the average, I would say, employee wages or everything, economically speaking, right, I would say maybe a 10K quota here would equal a 30 or 50K quota in the States, right? Mm-hmm. So each of my sales AEs has to sell 10K. That's their main metric. And then from there, I give them a metric of they got to give 20 demos. One thing that I thought was magically, which I believe it's the sales, they're having a successful sales formula. And I think it's one of the primary reasons why predictable revenue book or dividing the team, splitting it up, or the SDR works so well. I think before this book and these processes, we really had no control of the salespeople, right? I think the key here, or the gold nugget is, if you control their schedule, then there will not be this space of them, they're selling, right? You never know what they're doing, mm-hmm. right? So a lot of companies have their salespeople just go at it, right? And give them full space to do whatever they want with their 40 hours, right? So with this methods of unpredictable revenue and splitting out the process, basically I can tell them your job is basically to give the 20 demos, right, and close. So then I control their schedule, right? I book them the demo and they have to show in the demo, up in the demo, right? That's their job basically. So they gotta give 20 qualified demos. So obviously if the MRR team is not booking him also qualified ones, he has to book himself. So I do a little bit of this as well, just so they don't lose the hustle. And so they always are able to give their 20 qualified demos. But that's the metric so far that I have with the team.
Gotcha. And how big is the team right now?
We have 5 AEs on the inbound and 2 AEs on the outbound. And the outbound, they have a higher quota. On the outbound, I'm trying to get them to close 20K per month. I've hit it some months and I don't hit it some months. But like I said, I finally was able to focus on outbound continuously now for like more than 6 months, about 6 or 7 months ago. But it's working. It's a good thing.
That's great. And it's all of this driving that 50% year-over-year growth, which as a company of your size is still really impressive.
Yeah. I would say definitely, if I would have never read Predictable Revenue, I'd probably not still be working at Question Pro, and I would have not been able to grow this team or this company at this speed. I've always been passionate about business and entrepreneurship and had always wondered how companies in Silicon Valley grew so fast, because I was used to conceive traditional growth. And it's just amazing what you can do when you specialize the roles. And even though the whole team is pushing in one direction, everybody's pushing one brick, right? I think that's the one of the key pieces as well on the content of the book.
I love that. Everybody might be working on different things, but each individual team member has just one brick to push. Very well said.
Yeah, I'm just still chasing, just like chasing for Eldorado. I'm just still chasing for 100% growth year. Never done that in my life, so we'll keep hammering at it.
Right on. Andres, I want to say thank you so much for coming on the podcast. As I'm closing, I'm remembering the name of the book by Andy Grove was High Output Management.
High Output Management.
Great book.
Check it out.
Very dense. Highly recommend. Andres, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, thank you, Colin. It's a pleasure being here, and feel free to reach anytime. I know we'll be in touch.
Absolutely. If anybody wants to get in touch with you, they hear, hey, you know, you built this great office down for Latin America. How can we get in touch with you?
Yeah, so you can find me on different methods. My website is ventas20.com. So it's VENTAS.com. You can find me on social media at Mugira, my last name. And I know you'll have that on maybe on the podcast page,
yeah,
on Twitter or LinkedIn. All of my social networks is at my last name. You can find me like that, through that.
Perfect.
Just Google my name. Google my name as well, and I have SEO covered as well.
Of course you do.
Yeah.
Right on. Andres, thanks again for coming on the show. It's been great having you.
Hey, Colin, thanks so much. Great time spending with the Predictable Revenue fans and yourself.
Thank you.